We are very happy to be joined by Dave Choate, editor-in-chief of The Falcoholic. You can follow on Twitter at The Falcoholic. It's thefalcoholic.com, part of the SB Nation Network. Dave, thank you so much for giving us some time this morning.
Great to be on.
First and foremost, wanted to see how you were recovering from the Super Bowl. Everything going okay for you?
Yeah, you know, man, it's the one thing that really helped me was right after the Super Bowl, you know, nobody wanted to do anything, so I had to write a bunch of stuff about it just to keep things going, and it was kind of cathartic to work through it that way. But, you know, every time I see a 28-3 joke on Twitter, I get triggered.
Yeah, and obviously Devontae Freeman missing that block, a really big thing that happened there in the Super Bowl. But obviously he's a very important part of what the Falcons wanted to do. So I wanted to start off the interview really with talking about him and how ESPN, I believe it was Diana Russini, reported that the Falcons believe that they will have a contract extension in place with him before the start of training camp. And some people don't necessarily agree with that in terms of paying a running back a whole lot of money, and he definitely, in terms of the other running backs in the league, deserves to be compensated with some of the best. So what are your kind of thoughts on that, and do you agree that we will see that extension before training camp?
Yeah, I think, you know, you can't argue with Freeman deserving it. I think the whole complication here is that, you know, you don't necessarily want to pay running back big bucks, and the Falcons also have Tevin Coleman, who is such a key piece of the offense. But, you know, Freeman is just about the most well-rounded back in the entire league. You know, he's a really capable receiver. He's so good as a blocker, and he's a great running back in general. So, you know, the contract is deserved, and I think the Falcons, by virtue of repeatedly saying they're going to get this done and it is a priority, have boxed themselves into a corner there. I think they want to pay him, but they can't very well go back on that now without looking lousy. So I think there's a, not a rush, but a quick timeline to get this done. I do think it'll be done by the end of training camp, beginning of the season at the latest, and I think that Freeman will probably be one of the five or six most highly compensated backs in the NFL when it's all over. Again, you can't argue he doesn't deserve it. It's just a matter of paying the running back and knowing that you've got a lot of big contracts to hand out coming up, too.
So I would assume that if Devontae Freeman gets that big contract, that probably doesn't bode well for Tevin Coleman in terms of his future with the team. I mean, I know he's still on his rookie deal, has a few more years left, but in terms of the long term for him in Atlanta, if Devontae does get that big contract, probably means that Tevin will be moving on after this contract's over, I would assume.
I would assume, you know, a lot can change in two seasons, which is what Coleman has left in the running back situation. You know, you never know what'll happen with Freeman, even with a new deal in place. So it's possible, especially with the cap rising, that they'll elect to keep both of them. But you have to think that, you know, if they're making this decision with Freeman, that it probably means that Coleman is on his way out post-contract, or maybe the team will even try to flip him sometime in the 2018 season and see what kind of value they can get for him. But, you know, ideally you'd have both, because they're both huge parts of this offense. But if you're going to keep Mohamed Sanu around, if you're going to re-sign Taylor Gabriel, you know, even Justin Hardy's coming up pretty soon, you know, those contracts start to add up, and you probably can't afford to pay two running backs at a top 10 or 15 level.
Dave, with some of the coaching changes, especially on offense, what are your expect? I mean, I know the offense was so good last year and so efficient, but with Sark coming in and Bush Hamden, the quarterback's coach, now what are your expectations of what the Falcons' offense is going to be like in 2017?
I think it'll look very similar to Kyle Shanahan's. I think you'll see a little bit less, you know, creative flair, I guess, would be one word for it. You know, Shanahan liked to do some pretty cool, tricky things with the offense, and not a lot of repeatable stuff sometimes, you know, getting a guy the ball in a particular way that the defense could wise up to pretty quickly, but was really novel. I think you'll see a little bit more of a straightforward offense under Sarkisian. I don't think you'll see as much involvement from the fullback. I think you will see more usage even of two tight end, potentially at the expense of Taylor Gabriel. But overall, they, you know, the principles and the play action and everything that you've seen from this offense is probably going to be just about the same. The real question is whether, you know, the regression monster bites a little bit, given that that was way outside of the career norms for Matt Ryan. I've always thought he was good enough to do this, but, you know, the same offense, I think, with most of the same principles and most of the same talent, probably will be more like a top five unit this year than the best offense in the NFL. And, you know, you're looking at the defense to improve to compensate for that a little bit, but it's still, you know, it's still going to be one of the better offenses in the entire league.
Talking with Dave Choate from the Falcoholic, the editor-in-chief of thefalcoholic.com, and minicamp just wrapped up for the Falcons. Any stories kind of coming out of minicamp that Falcon fans should be paying attention to?
I think the big one, you know, and it's interesting in a lot of ways because you've got two guys that are really hyped based on minicamp. Justin Hardy's one of them, and the rookie DeMonte Casey is the other. And you look at the two of those guys, they're both clearly talented. You know, Hardy's proven it already at the NFL level that he's about one of the most sure-handed guys on the team, particularly in the red zone. But you do have to wonder, where's the role for those guys? And so, you know, if they're really as impressive as they're being built up to be in minicamp, you got to find a way to get them on the field. But Kazee, you know, he's blocked by Brian Poole and Jalen Collins, and, you know, is not probably going to start at safety, so he's going to have to kind of scrape out some playing time. Hardy's behind Julio Jones, Mohamed Sanu, and Taylor Gabriel, so you have to wonder where those opportunities are coming from. So those are the big ones. I think those are guys to watch closely and see if they can leapfrog somebody else on the depth chart. The only other thing to really look for from minicamp, you know, you can only get so much out of it, is that we didn't see any real separation early on between Wes Schweitzer and Ben Garland at right guard. And that's still the most important battle on the roster to me, because you really can't afford to install a subpar player there and still get the same kind of offensive production you did a year ago.
One guy I wanted to ask you about was Tack McKinley. Obviously, the Falcons value him very highly, drafting him in the first round. And the weird thing is, I kind of feel like even with Tack McKinley, that there's still a spot for Dwight Freeney on this team. And you know, they kind of talked about that in terms of him being a guy that they're definitely going to keep on the radar, but not signed just yet. And he's not a guy as a veteran that needs to go through mini camps and all this stuff. But would you say that there's a pretty high percentage that they bring him back, or does it really depend on how Tack McKinley looks in mini camp slash training camp?
I think it does depend on how Tack McKinley looks, and the health of Adrian Claiborne in particular, and Derek Shelby as well. You know, when they reported that Dwight Freeney had talked to Dan Quinn about returning, it seemed like, okay, that's going to happen. But then Quinn sort of walked that back a little bit and was like, oh, you know, we talked about love and life and family, but, you know, or whatever they did. But, you know, he's not necessarily coming back, so it's kind of a cloudy situation, and I think the thing to remember with Freeney is that, as valuable as he is, if McKinley is a player and can contribute right off the bat, the Falcons kind of like to rotate guys all along the defensive front. They're not carrying a lot of true defensive tackles right now, and I think you can make the argument that somebody like Courtney Upshaw, who would probably be cut if Freeney is signed, is just as valuable because of that inside-outside versatility that he brings. So I think it's going to depend on injury and roster composition as to whether they bring him back. I'd welcome him back with open arms, but you do have to cut a at least semi-valuable veteran to bring him back. So it'll bear watching. I'm really not sure which way it's going to go.
I mean, wouldn't his value almost more be in a sense of bringing along Vic Beasley and Tack McKinley? Because Vic Beasley had his best season. Obviously, he's only in his second season, but he had a much better season with Dwight Freeney on the other side. And obviously, you would think that with the spin move development that Dwight Freeney helped Vic Beasley with, you would think that just having Freeney on the team to kind of help mentor and continue to mentor Beasley and mentor Tack McKinley, that's where his value is almost even more than on the field.
I think that's absolutely true. I do think you can make the case too, that, you know, Freeney is somebody who, by virtue of, you know, the fear that he puts into opposing offenses, really did wonders for Beasley, too, because he let Beasley run free because, you know, you didn't have a subpar player, or at least a mediocre player, on the other side of Beasley, which really allows teams to double-team him. So if you think Freeney can still bring it in a meaningful way, I think that's just as valuable as any veteran mentoring that he's going to do for you. But then that comes back to, again, if on the other side from Beasley you have a healthy Derek Shelby, you get Tack McKinley involved, and so forth, you know, maybe you don't need Freeney quite as much, again, unless you're looking for that veteran leadership.
Dave, I'm going to give you the beginning of a sentence and you finish it for me. If the Falcons lose their season opener in Chicago against the Bears, what's the rest of that sentence?
People are going to freak out, man. you know how this fan base is. I love them to pieces, but they're not real cool and rational when things go wrong. And losing to the Bears would be pretty bad. You know, I think that Aaron Freeman of Falcons fans, another Falcon site that I like a great deal, he's topped up the Bears this offseason. They do have a solid defense, and there's some intriguing pieces on offense there, but they still figure to be one of the worst teams in the NFL. So if you go on the road and you lose to them, the fans aren't going to be happy. There's going to be a lot of talk about that Super Bowl hangover. And, you know, you're going to have to start winning right after that to sort of put people at ease. So it would not be an ideal way to start the season. I really hope that doesn't happen.
Are you glad that it didn't turn out to be the Falcons and the Patriots in that Thursday night game to start the season?
You know, on one hand, I really wanted it because I wanted to see that revenge, hopefully, you know, right off the bat. But on the other hand, you know, it's just going to rip the scab right off, you know, in week one if you have to face the Patriots and listen to all that talk, in particular if the Patriots win. So, yeah, I think with the advantage of a little time in hindsight, I'm glad it wasn't week one.
Yeah, someone that's going to be in Chicago for that season opener, that would be an extra sting if they don't win that game, but it seems like that's a much better position for them to be in with a game that they're going to be favored in, even on the road, and you would hope that they could start the season off on a good note. I wanted to switch gears here and talk about the ceremonial or honorary retirement of Michael Vick as a member of the Atlanta Falcons. And obviously, Vick is a divisive guy within the Falcons fan base. There's still a portion of the fan base that is very loyal to Vick. But both of the guys you're talking to right now were not in favor of this move. I just didn't feel like it was necessary, especially with what Vick did to the franchise. I get the kind of redemption of it, but again, it wasn't really something the Falcons needed to do. Honoring Roddy White, sure, 100%. He's the best receiver in franchise history as of right now. But bringing Michael Vick along with it, it just kind of seemed like, yes, you're appeasing one portion of the fan base, but you're upsetting another portion.
Yeah, you know, it was, I understood why they did it. I thought the whole ceremony, it was really interesting to me. I almost think that the Falcons got an outpouring of support for Vick when he discussed, you know, sort of floated that retirement trial balloon out there, and I think they kind of threw it together a little bit quicker than they would have otherwise, you know, to kind of fill the off season with some good feelings. I had no problem with it. I felt honestly like if you're going to honor Roddy, you might as well honor somebody who's probably his best friend, who, you know, really got his career started and was an integral part of the team. I think that 2007, you know, was an awful year, and you know, you'll never really say 100% that you feel great about the way that went down, or that you can 100% put that behind you with Vick. It's part and parcel of who he was in this town. But at the same time, you know, I think we're 10 years on from it. You know, he was an incredibly vital piece of the team. He really revitalized Falcon football and made it exciting again post-Super Bowl hangover there. So I had no problem with them honoring him. And if they're going to get him involved in the franchise going forward, which is something that seems like it might happen, it's certainly a symbolic first step for that. So you know, obviously, like you said, it's 100% Roddy. I think, you know, you could say 75% Vic maybe, but I was glad they did it.
Would you say, though, that in terms of them honoring Vic, this is probably the last step? Like, he's not going to make a Ring of Honor. He's not going to have his number retired, you wouldn't think, just because there is still a portion of the fan base that is upset with him. If I had my way, this would be it. It's like, all right, they did this for him. Now they don't need to do anything else.
Well, and I feel that way, too, because, you know, to me it was a really bizarre thing to hear Arthur Blank say something about, you know, maybe these guys will have their numbers retired. Well, Falcons don't retire numbers officially anyways. Mm-hmm. They put guys in the Ring of Honor. So it felt like an odd comment. But secondly, honestly, you can't really make the argument that if you're looking at the greatest players in franchise history in terms of what they were actually able to do, I recognize Vic's importance and his potential to do more had he been able to be around longer, but you're talking about the greatest players in franchise history, and to me, Vic just doesn't quite rise to that level. Roddy is a slam dunk, no-brainer. You got to put him in the Ring of Honor, but I think you're looking at, you know, you're going to be putting Todd McClure, I think, in there. You're going to be putting Roddy in there. You have Julio, Matt Ryan coming up, maybe Trufant. I just think if you look at the guys that are already in there and the guys you're going to put in, yeah, this is probably the last thing that you're going to do with Michael Vick.
Is Matt Ryan the greatest player in Falcons history already, or does he still have some work to do?
I think he's still got a little bit of work to do. I think that, I mean, the resume there is unimpeachable at this point. You've got a guy that's won the old franchise's only MVP. He's the best quarterback in the team's history, and quarterback is the most vital, you know, position. But I think I look back at guys like Nobis and Humphrey and, you know, Mike Ken in particular, who I think it's criminal he's not in the Hall of Fame. These are guys that are clear slam-dunk Hall of Famers in my mind, and Matt Ryan, you know, he's right on the cusp of that, but, you know, let's let him play for a couple more seasons and bring us back that Super Bowl ring, and I'll be like, all right.
The other argument that Sam and I have, too, is how are the Falcons going to do this year?
And that's exactly what I was thinking about.
Were you
here
about to ask that same thing? Being a little bit of a pessimist here, the old Super Bowl hangover curse losing team thing is what's in my brain. Sam says they're going to overcome that. And what is your prediction, Sam?
Winning the division is as far as I'll go right now. I just think that this team is built a little differently because they're so young and because they have a coach in Dan Quinn who's kind of so just straightforward on message. I feel like they're going to be okay this season.
What are your thoughts, Dave?
And I got to be honest, I agree. I think that, you know, I think this is probably a 10-6, 11-5 team again. Obviously, there are things that can go awry, but that's true every single season. To me, it's the message discipline. It's the veteran leadership on this team, and it's the fact that they're just so talented. You know, for the 1998 Falcons going into 1999, the Super Bowl hangover was certainly a factor, but the bigger factor was that you lost Jamal Anderson, who really was the centerpiece of that offense. And so for the Falcons, you know, there are a couple of vital players that they really can't lose, but there's just so much talent here, and I feel like they've done such a good job of building that base up that if you're getting this team healthy and on the field against what's on paper anyways, an easier schedule than they had a year ago, I'd be really surprised if they fell apart and fell short. I think they can make this happen.
Dave Choate, editor-in-chief of thefalcoholic.com. We'll have to call you back again around training camp when that starts up.
Sounds great to me. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Dave.
All right, thank you, Dave. That was Dave Choate from thefalcoholic.com, part of the SB Nation Network. You can check them out at thefalcoholic on Twitter and thefalcoholic.com. Also, Dave's Twitter account, @wordsandbeer.